This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, I'm Glenn Pugh for AvWeb.com. The need to deliver aid in a timely manner to people isolated by extreme terrain, dense forest, or other geographic barriers has created some of the most capable aircraft and pilots in the world. In many cases, a pilot and an airplane has simply been the best way, and sometimes the only way, to get the job done. But a new idea aims to apply relatively new technology to expand delivery and interaction options to meet specific needs for geographically isolated communities without the need for manned aircraft and at significantly lower costs. We're speaking today with Andreas Raptopoulos. Andreas is the team leader for Matternet. Andreas, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here.
We'll start simply. What is Matternet? What does it hope to do, and how does it plan to do it?
Matternet is a new paradigm for transportation in regions with no road infrastructure, such as Africa and other regions in the developing world. It is an autonomous logistics network using three components. The first is autonomous electric aerial vehicles. The second is ground stations that automate the flow of goods through the system and fulfill energy requirements of the aerial vehicles. And the third is AI-driven logistics software that regulates the navigation of the vehicles through the system. It handles customer requests and detects packet routes optimized in real time for the urgency of the delivery, the network load, weather conditions, and other risk factors.
To whom have you presented this idea, and what's the reaction been so far?
We developed this idea as part of the graduate studies program at the Singularity University this summer. This is a place where a lot of very capable people come together to address what we call the grand challenges facing humanity. Our grand challenge was poverty, and we understood that transportation is one of the key problems that need to be addressed in the developing world for people to be able to find a sustainable path out of poverty through commerce. So we presented developed the idea during the Singularity University this summer, and we presented it at the end of the program in a large forum of Singularity University attendees, including press people.
Well, tell me about the vehicles you're looking at and how they'll operate.
We started looking at quadcopters because of their vertical takeoff and landing capabilities. There is, as you know, a lot of work happening in that technology area right now. We were able within 3 weeks to build a couple of quadcopters using the DIY drones platform. The Arducopter, and we set up some range and payload requirements, and we were very quickly able to get on a path using the open source platforms that would allow us to meet those requirements.
Well, now let's talk about some of those requirements. What sort of limitations are you looking at with a quadricopter range, for example?
Our initial specification was to transfer 2 kilograms over 10 kilometers. This is a concept we term internally as the bandwidth of our Matternet, of the system. We envision this bandwidth to go up over time, but our initial user research indicated that if we could transport this type of load over that sort of distance, we could already be helping a lot of people, especially in the medical area, for administering HIV/AIDS blood tests and dispensing medication to people that need it.
So is that the ideal use? I think many of our listeners are thinking 2 kilograms and 10 kilometers is a very lightweight load and a very short distance. What's the ideal use for the machine, and as far as its interactivity, could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, this is the first use. Our long-term goal is to be able to transport heavy loads and even people through the system. But we see a big urgent need for transporting medication and specifically HIV-related blood tests and medication through the system. There are people right now doing it with motorbikes. We talked to an organization called Riders for Health, operating in the south part of Africa. There is a particular use case around the country of Lesotho. It's a very mountainous country with a very high percentage of people infected by HIV/AIDS. There is a huge need there for around 800,000 tests, blood tests, to be taken by people on HIV/AIDS medication a year. It's a huge task right now and a very difficult one for any means of transport. And we think we could help there. So we focused our efforts on first creating a vehicle that would allow us to do that.
Well, I suppose that brings up something I didn't realize. These tests, they revolve on a back and forth sort of correspondence, don't they? It's not as simple as loading an airplane full of supplies and dropping it via parachute, is it?
That's correct. So the problem there is to administer the test to the people that need it, and these people are dispersed in rural areas in Lesotho. There is 570,000 people infected with HIV/AIDS in Lesotho, and 70% of them, around 400,000, live in rural areas. So these are the people that we need to reach. And once they get the blood test, that blood test needs to go back to 19 labs in the main hospitals in the country. Then they need to receive the results back and then the medication back. So we have a bi-directional problem there. It's not just about dropping them something. It's about dropping them something, getting it back, and then dropping them something else.
What's the predicted reliability of this vehicle as, well, the vehicle system, I suppose, as a whole, and particularly its navigation system?
This is one of the huge challenges we need to face. We don't have a good enough answer for this yet. One of the things that it's one of the key priorities that we need to address in our testing. We've already signed up the Dominican Republic as our first pilot site, and they agreed to fund us to do some of those tests. Internally, the reliability that we set as our goal is 99%. So out of 100 packages, we need to be able to reliably deliver 99. Aviation and navigation seems to be, there seems to be enough technology to allow us to do that today. Weather conditions, I think, is the biggest risk, and we may have to resort to different platforms in order to be able to operate under different weather conditions. So already we started, although we started with the quadcopter platform, or generally the multicopter platform, we may use more than four motors, we may well employ fixed-wing aircrafts to be able to operate in different weather conditions.
Well, now, what's your forecast for unit costs? I suppose we should speak initially with the quadcopters. And who carries the burden of paying for it?
We've done some financial modeling for the type of vehicle we've been trying to develop. We projected a unit cost of about $1,200. And we then run two models. One model where we sell these to NGOs for about $2,000 to $2,500, so we make a profit on that sale. And the second model is where we operate the vehicle and we only charge for a certain price per kilogram kilometer traveled. The best way forward will be determined again through our pilot testing. We'll see how reliable the technology is. Generally, the more reliable the technology, the more access different people, non-experts, could have to operate in it. One of the key drivers we have for the technology is making it very, very simple and reliable so that people that don't have access to, they're not experts in the field, they can operate it. But of course, starting up with the technology, this is not going to be the case. So we see a need for us to provide the service.
Well, let's expand out to the future. Tell me more about how you hope the program will spread its influence in the countries it serves. I suppose I'm talking specifically about your planned network of charging stations.
Mm-hmm. So our first phase of rolling out the program is with point-to-point transportation links. So in the first phase, we will not be using ground stations, but in phase two, we will be having those robotic automated ground stations, which will handle automatically pick up and delivering loads and uploading those loads, exchanging those loads with UAVs. And we'll also do quick swap of batteries for the UAVs for them to be able to fly further. The model behind that is that a village could, or a government could buy for a village one ground station. If that ground station is within the range of the rest of the network, then that ground station will become part of the network, and this is the way that Matternet will expand. If two remote villages that are within 10 kilometers range decide to buy a ground station each, then that will mean that UAVs can fly at a high frequency between them, and they will have a very reliable transportation link between them. Now, the concept of the ground stations and the Matternet in general, extrapolating from that, is similar to the concept of the internet. So we want to be able to transfer huge loads by transferring them one packet at a time. So we will have one chunk that may be 2 kilograms or maybe more than 2 kilograms as we move forward. And one will be able to transfer, you know, hundreds of kilograms of or pounds just by transferring a lot of those packets in quick succession. The way to do that would be that we will have a lot of UAVs and a lot of traffic through the ground stations, and the ground stations will do the hot swaps of the loads and the batteries in very quick succession.
So very simply put, we're talking about quadricopters or something similar, autonomously flying between two points. These are electrically powered vehicles. They would land at a charging station, which may have already charged some batteries, I suppose, through solar power. It automatically swaps out the charged batteries for the used batteries, and the unit takes off on its way.
That's right, yes. That's a very well, a very good way of describing it.
Well, logistically, at this time, aside from forward-looking, what is the very next step? What are the very next steps for Matternet?
Our first priority is to operate on the ground and test those vehicles in different weather conditions, start delivering payloads with them, really testing our assumptions that the range and the payload are the right range and payload to start with. If not, revising our concept of which vehicle to use to make sure we meet the needs of the regions we will try to serve. As I mentioned earlier, we've already have agreed to a pilot at the Dominican Republic. They decided to go ahead and fund the first pilot of the system there. And they've got a number of needs. We'll try and go through them and see which of those needs we can address using this technology. In terms of moving forward as a company, we are now at raising our first seed round of capital. So we will most likely be based at the NASA Ames Research Park. And we have a strong team of people that are dedicated to making that change happen and create this new this next paradigm for transportation in the developing world.
Now let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. What are your hopes for the future of this effort as technology evolves? What's the big dream for Matternet?
The big dream is roadless world. So we basically want to create a new paradigm in transportation that would allow goods and people to transport themselves through places in the developing world without the need to ever build road infrastructure.
We've been speaking with Andreas Raptopoulos, team leader for Matternet. You can find out more about the project online at matternet.net. I'm Glenn Pugh for avweb.com. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.